Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome to News and Views. I'm your host, Rob Schofield. Well, Halloween pumpkins are turning up all over North Carolina, but the supposedly part-time North Carolina General Assembly remains in session 3 full months after its traditional adjournment date. Despite failing to override his June budget veto, legislative leaders refused to negotiate with Governor Cooper, choosing instead to try and pass so-called mini-budgets and slowly processing dozens of bills that have been lingering on the calendar all summer. Recently, I caught up with State Representative Pricey Harrison of Guilford County to get her take on this extraordinary period in state politics and, in particular, her assessment of the state's numerous environmental problems and what policymakers are and aren't doing to address them. Well, Representative Pricey Harrison, welcome back to News and Views. Good to have you back with us.
I appreciate you having me.
Well, these are extraordinary times in North Carolina politics. Here we are looking towards Halloween, and the legislature is still in session. Theoretically,
indeed,
should have adjourned 3 months ago. We got no state budget. We had this sort of weird override of the governor's veto in the House when members were absent, but the Senate hasn't followed suit. So now we seem to be passing so-called mini budgets that will be a substitute for a genuine state budget this year. What are your thoughts on where we are?
It's a heck of a way to do business, but one benefit of having the mini budget is it allows more scrutiny of each of these particular. So we're finding little bits in the mini budgets that deserve a little bit more conversation that you don't get to have when you have a 400 or 500 page budget.
That said,
there were a lot of important pieces of that budget that I think that we should be thinking of collectively, and I think the big obstacle here is lack of willingness to negotiate. And I think the governor's been willing to, but I think the leadership in the House and the Senate have been less inclined. But I think they're inching towards a willingness to talk. And I think they're a little bit far apart on the teacher salary and educator salary. And that's why we haven't seen a mini budget on that yet.
Yeah.
And then, you know, obviously on the Medicaid expansion piece.
Well, the Medicaid, of course, has been a debate all year long. There was a hearing, actually, that some Democrats had recently where you heard from some actual individuals who talked about the impact that the failure to expand Medicaid is having on them and their families. And I don't know if you had any thoughts on that. It seems to continue to be just a remarkable gap in our state that is unfilled and a lot of people struggling and suffering.
I think we're 37 states that have passed it. They realize the importance of it to their state's uninsured and their state's economy. I was at that hearing. It was really compelling and a little bit emotional when we were talking about lives that are lost because of lack of access to health care.
Yeah.
That's the one piece of it that I can't fathom how they can rationalize the folks who are opposed to it. 2,000 or 3,000 North Carolinians die every year because of lack of access to preventative health care. And that would be improved by Medicaid expansion. In addition to the 600,000 plus North Carolinians that have health care and the tens of thousands of jobs and the billions to our state's economy. So it's hard even, so like on the economic argument or on the moral argument, it makes no sense that we haven't followed suit with the other states. And it just seems to be this sort of partisanship. And now can you be partisan about health care? It's very frustrating to us. And anybody who was at that hearing that listened to those folks speak and couldn't walk away and think that we need to do this right away, I just probably don't belong in the legislature.
Senator Phil Berger, who's been probably the most visible opponent of Medicaid expansion, is sticking to that position, although he seems to finally have been acknowledging at least that there is a coverage gap that needs to be addressed. He doesn't seem to have any particular solutions for it, but maybe that's an inkling of light at the end of the tunnel.
Well, hopefully there's some progress there, but we all know what the solution is to it. Just expand Medicaid. Yes.
I want to talk to you about the environment in our state, the natural environment, because you are one of the most widely recognized experts on that topic in our state, certainly amongst policymakers, and we've got so many critical issues right now. Of course, there's just the overarching issue of the climate crisis that now afflicts our globe. Do you sense perhaps finally there's less denial about that that's taking place in our state?
I'm forever naively optimistic about our chances to do good on this issue. I don't see much movement on the other side on this resistance to addressing climate, but if you put it in the context of clean energy jobs, there's a lot of support for that. So I don't think we can talk about climate mitigation or adaptation yet, but we can talk about clean energy and clean energy jobs and what's good for our state's economy, and especially in the rural areas that benefited significantly from the expansion of solar energy.
Governor Cooper recently has sort of doubled down on a clean energy plan for our state. It's got a lot of very specific details, but in general, it seems to be moving us in that direction. That's the goal, anyway, to move us in that direction of a less carbon-based energy situation and a cleaner economy that would create new jobs in new areas, right?
His leadership on that is very refreshing. It's been a long time since we had a governor who was so committed to sort of environmental issues, but having his leadership on the climate issue is really important when we have intransigence at the federal level. We need for states to act, and hopefully we can be bipartisan about that on some of these more aggressive measures in his plan. But I applaud him for both Executive Order 80 to address climate change and then this clean energy plan that they, I believe, just got reported last week.
Duke Energy has even come out with a statement saying they want to move us in the direction of carbon neutrality. There's been some pushback as to how serious they are about that. But I guess even the fact that a giant energy company is willing to talk about that perhaps is a positive sign.
I believe so. I think there's a big piece of nuclear in that, which is some folks have some heartburn about. But
I don't know if this is an issue you're following. Solar energy credits. I know there's been some controversy over whether the Department of Revenue is properly crediting people for solar energy investments. I mean, obviously, we've got to be moving in the direction of expanding solar energy. But I guess there's some dispute over the specific language, perhaps, of our state revenue laws on the credits that people can claim.
And I had heard a little bit about that from constituents who are concerned about it. I think probably we just need to provide some clarity, either in the state law or the regulations. And I know there was some issue at the Utilities Commission as well. When we passed Senate Bill 3, it was pretty broad and left a lot of room for interpretation, and maybe we should spell out some of that now.
What about the issue of hurricane resistance and sea level? Maybe we can't talk about sea level rise either. Maybe that's a forbidden topic. But, I mean, it's clear we've had another devastating hurricane that's affected North Carolina this year. Do you sense that there's some movement perhaps in the direction of realizing we've got to have a resilient infrastructure when it comes to utilities, when it comes to roads, all those kinds of things in a changing world? We're going to have some additional investments if we don't want to be just really behind the eight ball all the time.
Well, of course that makes sense. And I would think that fiscal conservatives would buy into that because of the enormous amount of taxpayer expenditures to recover from these, whether it's roads or like utilities. I mean, I don't know how many times we've rebuilt Highway 12. And you all presented that geologist, Rob Young, and he talked about, we've got the collapse of Cape Lookout, and that's just like the canary in the coal mine for the Outer Banks. We're looking at some significant problems for our coast that we need to think about, in terms of storm resilience.
Another issue, that critical environmental issue that seems to have really emerged, maybe that's the right word, emerging contaminants. We're starting to hear more about the last few years, these so-called PFAS, mm-hmm. PFAS, and Gen X, this chemical that we know that Chemours, the subsidiary or former version of DuPont, has been releasing in southeastern North Carolina. This is clearly something we've got to get a handle on because it's a dangerous chemical that seems to be in our water supply more and more.
Yeah, and it's nicknamed the forever chemical because it's around. And I think it sticks to fat, jumps up the food chain. Yeah, and it's a known carcinogen and a neurotoxicant and immunosuppressant. There are all kinds of health problems associated with it. And we don't even know what we don't know. And we don't know about which chemicals, when they combine with other PFAS family chemicals, what they mean. Because we've studied a few individually, some great work going on through the Collaboratory.
Yep.
I applaud that.
UNC.
But I've actually been thinking about this since 2005 when I was first alerted to the PFOA issue. Mm-hmm. Our department was adopting standards that were considered a public health emergency in Germany because it was a DuPont chemical.
Yeah.
And they had a plant in Kinston, so there was pressure. So I hope that we can overcome the resistance from industry and adopt some stronger standards here because, once again, we've got the federal leadership is lacking there. We've got some language in one bill that will at least get a handle on what the problems associated with fire foam. That's a big problem.
The foam, that it's affecting firefighters, and when they spray it on runways, then it runs off into local creeks and things
like
that.
Yeah, so we've got fire foam-related contamination all over the state, in Charlotte and Greensboro and Atlantic, North Carolina, and near Camp Lejeune. I mean, there's a number of places where we have documented contamination for the fire foam, and we sure shouldn't be using it for practice. So we've got legislation that will eliminate the practice use of the fire foam and hopefully eliminate the use of the fire foam, but it's in everything. It's in Gore-Tex, it's in Teflon, it's in microwave popcorn bags, it's in pizza boxes, it's in food wrapping. We need to think sort of more proactively about whether we can continue to expose our citizens to these dangerous chemicals.
Are we seeing any kind of leadership, or is it mostly just obstruction from the federal EPA and the Trump administration on this stuff? It seems pretty bleak.
The new federal law that applies to this, it was updated recently, that seemed to have good bipartisan support, a little bit too much industry support, but bipartisan support, at least it gets us there incrementally. The EPA got a start, but then under the Trump administration, it's just been all backwards on all kinds of issues. But on this particular issue, yeah, I mean, they've cutting the budget, moving staff, on everything. And it's very frustrating to watch what's happened at the federal level, which makes it even more incumbent on the states to protect our water and air.
Our time is limited, but I thought I'd at least ask it to conclude. Any sort of predictions on what happens next at the General Assembly this session? You Speaker Moore has talked about not much clarity about when you might adjourn. The Senate may be talking about adjourning by the end of October. What's your gut tell you is going to happen in the General Assembly this fall?
My gut is unpredictable, completely unpredictable. But I do think there's some movement towards possibly some redistricting reform. And so whether that happens before we adjourn or if it's going to happen, I think there's some thought it might happen before the 2020 election. Mm-hmm. So that might keep us here a little bit longer. But otherwise, I think we just pass these mini budgets and then go home. Just a few bills out there.
Well, for your sake and maybe for the state of North Carolina's sake, we'll keep our fingers crossed that the session comes to an end real soon.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thanks for all your service.
Sure. Thank you.
Coming up next, national economic growth is doing little to end the vexing problem of child poverty. We'll look at some of the latest numbers in North Carolina. Stay with us.